It is Monday, the 16th of February, 2015. This is episode 237 of Digital Outbox. Welcome to another episode, as Ian has a yawning fit. I am Chris. Welcome to episode 237. God, is it that many? Joined as ever by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Ha! Good evening. it wasn't a yawn. It was an Diet Iron Brew burp.
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry. I missed somethinged.
Yeah.
Identified. Yeah. That's the word. Oh, this is going to go well. So let's get on with the news while we're still talking just about in kind of words that almost make sentences. We're going to start with Samsung today. They are rejecting concerns over their Orwellian privacy policy. This relates to a story around their TVs, their smart TVs, which allow you to talk to them and control them via voice. Turns out that sends all your voice data over to a third party company, and they process it and send back the command that needs to be sent to your TV. But they have put in their privacy policy that you need to be careful about talking about sensitive topics in your living room, because they will share that.
Can you imagine if you had a Samsung TV in the bedroom?
So Samsung have come and said that actually, you know, come on, this has been overblown. They were almost kind of saying, okay, we had to put this into the policy because, yes, that's what happens. All that data gets sent over to this weird third party, which we're pretending is us, but isn't really. It's amazing that this has to happen to actually just get your TV to do something, but it goes off around the internet, your whole voice command.
Samsung would have been better just pointing to the BBC's tech journalist Rory Kicklin-Jones, who did a video article showing how bad the voice recognition was, and saying you've got nothing to worry about.
it just doesn't work. Got a clue what you're saying
exactly.
So there's been all that kind of going around. And it's reached everywhere, right? Everywhere's been talking about that.
Yeah, and Apple do the... I don't know if it's changed, but I think they were doing the same. Because I think when Siri first came out...
I think they all
out,
do it.
Yeah, when Siri first came... Well, I think Google have done a lot more now on the actual device.
I think maybe it has a limited amount, but I'm pretty sure that it's still... It's kind of that differentiation between sometimes you have to download a database onto your local, you know, bit of hardware from a remote source that gets updated, but that starts chewing up memory and stuff, and things like voice recognition, that's going to chew up tons of stuff.
Yeah, and because I know when Siri first came out, they were, I think I remember it now, that Siri, the way Siri worked, it was doing, you had to do the whole, if you wanted to like do dictation, you had your whole paragraph and then it sent it away and then it came back with mistakes, whereas Google were doing it live. They were doing it and you could see it changing and it was really intelligent.
They sent it away to some Middle Eastern country and then someone sat down and actually typed it back for you.
You just hate the Middle East.
They didn't.
Just so much racism in that. Why the Middle East? Why not China?
All right, China then. Because they would never trust China with it. And that's why. So that's all been going, doing the rounds. But yes, it comes down again to that whole situation of, do you want your TV to listen to what you're saying, as far as do you want it to be controlled by your voice? And are you really that bothered about the fact that it has to send your voice off somewhere? It does sound worse in words than it does in the reality of it.
TVs are getting too complex.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where, you know, if Apple ever did something different, you know, if they could actually get, you know, a smart TV but simple. You know, just do all this stuff and make it easy.
I have to say, I like telling my Xbox to pause, though.
Oh, it's caught.
If you're bringing your dinner in, because I'm modern, you know, TV dinner, and you haven't got any hand to hold on to the controller, or the controller's gone to sleep. Promise you, I get upset now that I can't do it in the Sky. So there.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's fine. I'm saying that... I've turned into like a Tory because I've used voice in the car, and it's just,
well, there you go. See, I know. And you'll get used to it. You just get used to it. I have to say, like I say, Netflix, Xbox pause, Xbox play all the time. Facebook, they have added they're adding in America so far, someone called a legacy contact. This is someone who can take over your Facebook account when you pass away. Can be defined inside your profile settings, or alternatively, it can be activated by a will, so a proof of a will and some estate actuator, so they can actually assign them to your account, and that allows them to make another post to say cheerio. or in fact,
here is your top 10 moments.
So one more post to sort of shut it down, and then they can decide whether they will actually be shutting down the whole account, or whether they'll turn it into a memorial.
I'm laughing as well, but I'm sure there was some sort of project manager somewhere had that up as one of like the, what could we do? You know, could we give that legacy contact an option to pick out the funniest moments, the most liked posts?
Let's make a stream.
Yeah.
I did see one very funny post ages ago on Facebook, which was a son of a mother going, ooh, this is the ghost of my mother. Not really. this is her son saying, we're shutting this down.
I talked about this ages ago. I actually think I've not updated it for a while, but I sent Shaq all my passwords for everything and said, see if I die. You know what you need to do, just shut all these down properly, because my mom won't have a clue. And it's like, I wouldn't want some kind of like, you know, emails coming through or posts coming through or anything like that might be automated, and somebody might get upset and say, oh no, he's dead, and he still tweets. Like his weight, I don't know how I'd get my weight because I'm dead, but you know the
he's losing weight fast.
Exactly. He was zero.
Got buried with his withing scale. Oh dear, this is not even funny.
Oh, he's fading right, away. So... Look at that.
he's wasted away.
But I actually do think it's it did kind of bug me. Certainly for a while, it was in my head that I want to be, you know, if something happens that they can just shut down everything gracefully and nicely. And I do think now that we've got so, you know, there's such a big reliance on all these accounts, that there has to be something.
Yeah, and it's a new problem. It's not really a problem that anyone's had to face before, but yes, it's a new problem. We've had to face it. You know, companies have had this issue about, you know, what happens when someone dies, but it's now more pervasive than ever. And also, there's less attachment. Whereas, you know, if you've got a gas account, you know, a gas provider, they've got processes in place. But also, you know, you have so many accounts in so many different places. That it's not like just having your gas and your bank accounts. Everyone knows how to deal with those, but
exactly.
It's just these weird. What do you do with a Pinterest account when someone?
I'm glad you said Pinterest. I was wondering where you were going with that. But it's no different to, you know. So at work, I've got like a next of kin. You know, so for the pension and stuff, that has to be up to date in case something happens, and hopefully it doesn't. Yeah. And it's no different to that with so many of these online accounts. And it's an area that they've not given a lot of thought of, especially the free ones, because it's like, well, what does it matter?
Yeah, it's not our problem if you die.
Yeah.
So yes, we'll see more and more of these policies come out, I'm sure. And there you go. Facebook are taking the first thing. It's coming over to the UK not too long away. They're going to roll it out once they've got rid of the US. I don't mean got rid of them. Revenge porn going to be made illegal. So this was announced a while back that they were thinking about sorting this out. And yes, it turns out it's going to be a new law or an extension to existing laws, which make the posting of revenge porn online an illegal matter and subject to 2-year custodial sentence.
Good. Well done.
Yeah. Scotland and Northern Ireland are looking like they're going to follow suit with their own implementations of similar things. But at the moment, it's UK, it is England and Wales.
Yeah, there's not much to say. You know, it should have been done probably quite a while ago.
And it probably was covered under other laws as well. But it's just easier. This defines exactly what they're talking about. Probably for someone to argue what that actually means. London smartphone thefts have dropped by 50% after the kill switch has been introduced on most handsets.
Yeah, this is, and I think it was kicked off by Apple first. They added a kill switch, and it was a 50% drop in London, but it's not just a UK thing. 27% drop in San Francisco, 16% in New York. So they're now, I think in America, they're making it a law.
You have to add a kill switch. Okay.
Yep. In California, a law mandating kill switches is yet to go into effect, but there will be.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's part of me which thinks, yes, I'm sure the kill switch has had a massive effect on that. Part of me thinks that there was the, you know, they're now all pervasive. It's a, you know, not everyone had a smartphone, so they were really attractive high-end things. And I'm sure, like I say, I'm sure the kill switches had a massive effect as well. But I just think most handsets now are not the desirable things that they used to be.
No, absolutely. The fact that 1% of people bought an iPhone in the last 3 months in the world, tells a story. And there was a great Wired article. I don't know if it's made it online yet, because I know the print, I think your print articles and the online, I think they come out over the year, over the month of the actual print article. And it was all about how, yes, the kill switch has helped, but it's amazing when you see the kind of industry round about smartphone thefts, you know, like how, especially in America, where and to a certain extent here, where, you know, you buy a handset for like $200, but you're actually paying monthly, that's $60 or $80. So you're subsidizing it over a 2 or 3 year period. Mm-hmm. A lot of other places don't have that. So that makes it a real valuable, you know, yep. Like you can, you know, that handset's $200 and you're basically getting, you know, you're making, selling it abroad for $800. So the profit margin, by the time you do all the shipping and distributing, you know,
it's worth it still for them to do that.
Big market. And it was just amazing the kind of routes that they followed, basically some stolen handsets, and they followed them around the world, you know, because you think this will end up, you know, in Glasgow, it'll probably end up in, I don't know, Maryhill or something, like the Barra's Market or something, and somebody will go and buy it.
But it ends in South Africa or something like that. Yeah,
absolutely scary. And the kill switch doesn't, you know, get around that.
No. Okay. EE have announced how they're going to spend $1.5 billion on upgrading better mobile coverage. They want to get double speed 4G to 90% of the UK. And they've also been talking how they're going to cover up to 99% of the population, which, you know, that's good for them. All these announcements are coming, you know, since the government have sort of forced them into telling them, well, they have to do this, that and the other.
Yeah, I also think, because I've kind of grouped these all together, because there's definitely a lot of electioneering going on. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when the next one was announced, then Cameron turned up. So there's a whole load of kind of posturing. but it's a good thing. When the double speed came to Glasgow last year, and it certainly made a difference. That being on 4G, not so much the bandwidth, but it's the latency drop as well. It's just great.
Yeah, for many people, it's not that part of this announcement that people will be rejoicing. It's the getting to the not spots and the extra coverage. And they're talking about having sort of micro transmitters rather than full infrastructure that bridge the gap where there are places where they can't get signals.
Yeah, we probably need friend of the show, Bright, to come on and explain
how that means,
how hard this probably is.
Because every single carrier is having to do pretty much exactly the same job because of the silly decision by the government, everyone's going to be announcing all this increase in sort of spending. And Virgin Media have also come out and said they're going to actually increase their spending on broadband they're going to invest $3 billion. So that's huge chunks of cash being promised into infrastructure. And I guess it's all good signs that things are recovering and that there's money moving around now.
And this was quite controversial because it's $3 billion, and it's extending the reach from 13 million to 17 million homes. So it's not
a massive jump.
No, but also they're only doing it in cities. So that's not going out to.
Yes, they're continuing their policy of, you know, sort of single areas, really easy to reach areas. So they're doing all the big municipal, you know, the massive. Towns and cities, basically, that they know that they could easily roll out to hundreds of people, but this $3 billion to extend by, you know, not very many million homes is it seems a lot of money, and like I say, that's not covering any more of the actual regions, and they you know, they've said that BT should be covering those gaps.
And the BBC News article video that I watched was just explaining how, you know, digging up the roads in cities is now no longer cheap because you have to pay quite a bit of money. So especially in London, seemingly the cost to dig up a road is extortionate, and that's where a lot of this cost is going to be. But they've already started. So the article went on to say they've already started extending in Glasgow again. Because I remember, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago when all the cable stuff started, it's just every road was getting dug up everywhere.
Yeah, I wonder how many homes that they actually, even they cover 13 million homes currently. I wonder how many of those 13 million they actually have on their books, because the jump from 13 to 17 to cover a 3 billion investment. You know, that's millions of pounds per extra home kind of thing. It's a bit, so they're going to have to obviously increase their take up as well as the reach that they've got.
Yeah, and it'll otherwise be interesting because of the benefit I still think Virgin have over, you know, BT is the actual fibre to the home. You know, so they're actually laying a cable into your home and it's a fibre. Whereas BT is for me anyway, is still an ancient old, you know, I can see the telephone wire across the sky, you know, it's like looping in and it's like, oh, no wonder I was only getting X speed.
Yeah, and BT have said that they're not willing to put fibre into the home as a regular thing. That's going to be a massive cost for you individually if you ever want to do that.
Yep.
They're still concentrating on fibre to the cabinet. So, I mean, BT are filling the gaps that something like a Virgin Media aren't willing to, basically.
And, I mean, the Virgin chief, Tom Mockridge, he was quite robust. He was like, he says, you know, so all this stuff about, you know, rural, you know, Britain, absolutely, it's an issue. And it's BT's job to do it. So they need to do. They need to bridge the so-called digital divide. And what he said is that BT should do more to invest in improving the existing infrastructure to help speed up internet service in the countryside. Leave the cities for us because that's where all the money is.
That's what he's saying. Yeah, let us take the easy pickings. David Cameron also announced $50 million on free Wi-Fi to UK trains. So across several operators. Not the full lot by any means, but basically trying to get Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
On board.
So don't worry about the congested trains and don't worry that they're not on time and don't worry that the rolling stock's really out of date, because see, when you're standing up after you've spent $3,000 on a season ticket, you get free Wi-Fi.
You can get buffer face.
Sod off, Tory boy. Honestly.
So no pleasing some people.
Oh, well, it's like, no, don't. You've almost got me. Well, no, you've got me, because it's like last week and there's all this stuff about tax and what do? Let's talk about benefits for fat people. And it was like, so, okay, pick on 2,000 or 3,000 people in the UK when you're talking about, you know, billions of pounds that the top elite aren't paying into the country. Well done, yeah. Tory boy.
We all know they're electioneering and they've just, you know,
winds me up.
The fat people can't get to the polling booths and they certainly can't fit in. So it's fine.
Winds me up.
Driverless cars. They are set to come up to the UK. We mentioned this probably a couple of months ago now. They sort of announced, I think it was another Cameron announcement saying, are we going to be at the forefront of this revolution? And we're like, well, how are they going to do that? Well, it turns out they're going to release these driverless pods they're starting in the O2 Arena and apparently have left people agore and agape at the fact that these things are driving themselves across these pedestrianised zones.
Have you seen the prototypes?
No. Are they rubbish?
So honestly, one of them looked like a Top Gear had built, like, a driverless car. There was another one that looked like had been modelled out of Trumpton, and I expected play a little toy tune as it moved around. And I know these are prototypes, and certainly the talk to one of the guys who's leading, I think it was a little pod, which was made in Coventry. And he's basically, and the only thing was they painted it all in this Union Jack. And I was like, come on. But he says they're trying to compete with America. It's got loads of cash. So. And but there's just, yes, although the UK government's investing money, it's small beer compared to elsewhere. So they're cutting their cloth. But don't paint it in a Union Jack.
I don't mind.
Where's my Scottish flag? Get that Union Jack away.
Included.
Away.
So, they're sort of touting the fact that, I mean, I think they're trying to big it up by saying, you know, driving on the road, piece of piddle in America, drive it across a dynamic pedestrian zone, and that's a really complicated thing. So it's kind of using radar, it's doing.
But wait till you, if you watch the video, I mean, it is literally, there was people walking by it going, hello.
See you when you get there.
Absolutely.
So yeah, anyway, it's small steps and all that. But I like it. I like the fact that they're going for it. I do dread the first incident where someone does get either run over by it or someone on board hits the head on a bar because it stopped abruptly or whatever. Because kids are going to find it quite fun to keep constantly stopping a self-driving car.
Well, that's the thing, because you just
say kids.
It's basically you and me. We're going to walk in front of it and see it stop, and somebody humans will be drinking at the same time, like a hot cup of coffee. Probably one of the obese benefit, you know, guys is going to be on there with a big, what would it, a big, I don't know, hot chocolate?
Hot, it's going to be hot chocolate with cream on top. Yeah.
And he'll be just about to do it. And me and you will run in front of it and it'll spill all over him and he'll sue us.
Exactly. Well, they know, but who do you sue?
Cameron.
Everything.
Well, he's caused both. He's made the guy fat on benefits because he's provided a driverless car.
There we go. Right. British Gas has bought UK smart home pioneer Alert Me. So these are, they had some investment there anyway. These are the guys behind Nest. Is that right?
No.
Am I totally wrong about that? Damn it. Am I jumping a story ahead?
You were so authoritative as well.
Just talk with authority and everything else comes.
I can't remember what
British... Oh, Hive is what I'm talking about. Hive, that's it.
So I think British Gas offer Hive, and they had a small investment in this group, and they've now bought them. And I don't think it's a big surprise, but it's good to see, because I think there's so much more that we could be getting out of this. And they've talked... I was going to say, because the government talked about smart meters, and I think it's all fell behind. I think they talked about, you know, over a 5 or 6 year period, they were going to, you know, the industry plus government money was going to fund, you know, everybody getting a smart meter, and I think it's all fell way, way behind.
I still don't think people see the benefits of it yet, because it is marginal, you know, but the idea is that you can be more efficient and more, you know, use your own habits to you know, rather than just a strict timer on your, you know, your thing, it can actually work out where you are and when you need the heating to come on.
Absolutely. Nobody's at home. Why do I need to do this to hot?
That's it. So
somebody's left work. I'll better switch heating.
And it shows that there is a lot of interest in this arena, that they're willing to spend, you know, $100 million, 60 million odd quid on something like this. So, yeah.
Oh, they made $2 billion in profit, so they need to spend it on something.
Okay. Yeah, Flipboard have decided they are going to move to the web arena, which is a kind of sidestep because they've always been dedicated apps so far. And there's a bit of umming and ahhing as to whether this is actually going to ruffle a few feathers, because they do curate content from all sorts of different locations, and they've got deals at the moment with certain publishers that they can put content in there. But that's because they've not been on the web arena, really, and whether those publishers are going to come on board with them.
Yeah, I mean, the website looks really good and provides all the same functionality as the app, but I'm a bit confused. You know, why would I go there and flip through things on the web? I don't know.
They've probably reached that kind of saturation point. They've got a lot of the users they're ever going to get. And they're just looking, because everyone, all these people have investors, they have to keep showing growth, otherwise the money dries up, and so this is probably their next, just trying to show that growth.
I really like.
You're right. I mean, apps, it did feel like it was an online magazine type thing where you had to have the app.
Yeah.
And it was quite a big difference.
And I liked the way you could subscribe to other people's like magazines, which was just them, you know, maybe almost like retweeting content, but they were doing it in certain topics. So you could subscribe to like people's drone magazines who were surfacing up all the content on drones.
Yeah.
I actually found that much easier to follow than trying to follow, you know, different RSS feeds. You know, but you just didn't, you know, it was maybe mixed in with a whole lot of other things. You know, it was almost
someone you trust editing the content, why not? Yeah, someone who has got a specialist interest, then that's perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, there you go. So they're moving to the web. Who knows what the effect that's going to have? It could have positive and negative effects. So, but it's something to keep an eye on, really. I guess they've talked to their partners, otherwise they wouldn't have done it.
Well, they must have done, but I remember when they first came out, there was lots of kind of oohing and aahing about the, no, I can view Guardian's content on here for free without any of their adverts.
Yes.
How does that
they're
work?
Talking about sharing that advert revenue now on this website. There was a lot of that, and also a lot of the time that they, you know, things like the Guardian let them publish their content purely because they weren't in direct competition with the website.
Yes.
Microsoft has acquired the a mobile calendar app called Sunrise. Looks like that. I mean, Sunrise is on every single platform other than Microsoft's at the moment, and it looks like they're going to be using that as a quick step up to implement that into their kind of Outlook type apps.
Yep, and they've done the same with buying Accompli. We talked about it last week, the week before, with Outlook. You know, it's been rebadged as Outlook on iOS, and it is very, very good. Sunrise was very, very good as well. So,
And of all the kind of acquisitions that we've been hearing about kind of, well, forever, Microsoft seemed to be the only ones that then announced the implementation of that acquisition relatively quickly. Everyone else either disappears and gets amalgamated into their next release, I don't know, 6, 12, 18 months down the line. Microsoft seemed to be able to churn these things through and ping them in almost immediately.
No, you're right. I mean, Facebook almost just bought talent. Yahoo just seems to, I don't know what they do. Apple seems to buy stuff and it just gets buried.
Yeah, and Apple buy things to stop other people buying them, you know, and they disappear into that kind of weird mushy pool. Yep.
Apple have bought Zane Lowe, so don't you hear him again?
Yeah, that's it. It's gone. All your new music. maybe you two won't. No, anyway, that's great. Deezer have decided they've rolled out high resolution streaming, audio streaming. So if you have a Sonos system and you're subscribed to the Deezer subscription service, you will get high resolution option coming down shortly. Basically FLAC streaming. So it's kind of the equivalent of, you know, I guess it's like the 4K equivalent in the audio world.
Yep. And there's been a few recently. I'm trying to remember the other one that was being talked around. I think Jay-Z has now bought the company. of all people. But there does seem to be a kind of push on, you know, to how can we differentiate ourselves from, you know, Spotify that's already out there as a market leader, and you've got Beats and you've got a few others who have got big names, but maybe not the same, you know, the same user base. Mm-hmm. It now seems to be this is the next kind of war. Let's go for this, you know, high resolution streaming.
And they've deliberately gone for Sonos. Obviously, if you've got the Sonos system, then you're likely to be into your music. And you know, via a subscription service. So they kind of hit the right market. How wide that will be and how many people actually want that, it's hard to say. But it's the difference between 320 kilobytes per second and 1400 kilobytes per second. So it's, as far as data bandwidth goes, it's a massive change. But you know, you need a pretty awesome system to even detect the changes.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people are, you know, because if you look, you know, in an Apple store, for example, there's lots of 400, 500, 600 quid, you know, streaming services sitting there or streaming boxes. So
yeah,
you know, you should be able to easily hear the difference. You look at the amount of headphones. I mean, headphones again is another one that's taken off. And there was all this talk about, remember when Apple bought Beats, and there was talk about they're going to use a Lightning port. So rather than an actual standard audio port, they'll use a Lightning port and they'll offer high res audio. And there's obviously Apple are up to something. You know, whether it's just they want exclusive content, you know, whether it's curation, I don't know what it'll be, and I guess we'll see this year. I mean, I'm still frustrated with the lack of like iTunes Radio. It just never came out here. It's only come out in America.
Mm-hmm.
So no doubt they'll do something with Beats or some sort of new service, and we won't see it for a year. Oh,
Eurogamer, poor little Eurogamer. They've decided. When I say poor little Eurogamer, Eurogamer have decided they're going to drop review scores. I think we've seen this happen. Other people have announced and done this before, but basically they're saying we just don't like the idea of review scores. We're going to stop them. We're going to give you a review one line summary instead. Which will give you a much better idea. We'll retain an idea of recommended games, essential games, and games to avoid. So we'll we'll assign something a one-line sort of summary, and then tell you whether you should definitely have this or definitely not have this. But getting rid of the kind of arbitrary 1 to 10 score, and also saying, sort of solidifying their policy that they never review something that is supposed to be online only until they've had a chance to really review it in its final environment.
Yes, and I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, Polygon had come out and says we're going to be a lot firmer now in reviews. We're going to almost give, you know, like an indicative score to say, like, actually we think this is a 7, but we can't test the online services. Or they're actually just going to say, well, review looks good, but we're hanging fire on a final judgment until it's been out for a couple of weeks. Just because I think so many games last year came out and they were broke. Halo, Drive Club,
yep.
Destiny, Titanfall, first few days was painful.
Yep.
You know, and almost every big Call of Duty suffered issues. Pro Evo suffered issues. You know, and that's that, just it's just too much for me. It was just too much last year. It was almost like a breaking point. You know, the whole shenanigans around Halo.
Every single release that you wanted to play, you couldn't, awful, for whatever reason.
You know, Halo wasn't. Was a mess. Drive Club was a mess. It was a mess for, wasn't just a couple of days. It was like,
yeah, it was,
6-8 weeks.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I mean, it, we've definitely gone backwards on many of those kind of online services now.
So I think
there's still a massive requirement or a massive consumer need for having scores, though.
Well, see, I disagree. I've been sucked in. So Destiny is a great example. I've been sucked into the whole going Metacritic. Oh, it's sitting at 80%. I ain't buying that.
Yeah.
And the first reviews for Destiny came out, it was a 7. I remember Polygon was a 7. I was like, oh, that's not very good. And other ones were down about the same, you know, 60, 70. There was a few.
There was a split reviewing community, wasn't there? Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it was, you know, such a good game last year and got so many hours out of it. You know, I would say it was far better than what I would have deemed, you know, what they were saying was a 7. So I'm as guilty as probably anybody. I go to Metacritic making a snap judgment and missing out on probably so many games.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I still, with a game that I'm considering, I'll definitely read the full review. So maybe they're just trying to get rid of that, you know, say that gut instinct and get you to really look at the detail. But
yep.
I mean, you're a gamer, the problem they suffer from is the fact that they are quite stringent about waiting to give a proper review, and they've said that they're now going to release sort of opinion reviews. They're not going to call them, sorry, that's opinions before a game's released, if they're allowed to, you know, subject to embargo or whatever. They'll give you an opinion, but they will not give their final review until that they've seen it on the online world. But the problem is, a lot of people want to read something, you know, early, and they will go and read something that someone says.
I totally agree, I don't know if it's an age thing. I don't know whether it's just I've got less and less needy of having it on day one, and I think it's a combination of a number of things. It's, you know, my lack of time, getting a bit older, but also getting just hacked off at the day one and waiting for a 2 or 3 or 5 gig patch to download. All that happens, I've got like maybe 20 minutes to not connect to a server.
Yeah, to then sit
and then just turn it off and think, well, what's the point?
So I could have waited a week and I wouldn't have lost anything.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's a positive thing, but also it's a bit of reflection that stop going to Metacritic and just seeing these, you know, as a 7. You know, and I think in movies when I've seen like 4 stars or 3 stars, and then when you actually go and see the movie, it was like, oh, that sucked. That was awful.
Yeah, and you see the movies they assign 10 stars to, and you think, oh, actually, that's even worse.
Yeah, you know, and it's just one of these things that it's a very judgmental thing. But the difficulty with games, it's you're looking at a 45 quid, 50 quid investment, and it's not something. And I said to you a lot about the 3DS. And I was looking at it when I came home, and so Shaq's picked up the new one. The 3D actually works, and I got very tempted just to order it. But then I go and see the price of games are still 35, 40 quid, and I'm like, no.
No, it's yesterday's stuff.
I'm just not going to do it. So I think it's a positive thing. I feel sorry for the one I feel sorry for was Edge. I've read Edge since issue one. I have every issue of Edge over in a bookcase. And for years they talked about we need to get away from review scores.
Yep.
But they kept talking about it, and they should have just manned up and done it.
They hid, didn't they? Didn't they hide review scores online in the end? I think that's what they ended up doing. Isn't it? They only left review scores in the magazine.
Yeah, but was that not just to try and protect sales?
Yeah, well, maybe. Yeah. But you know, maybe it was sales.
There was for years they kept on talking about, well, we've had a discussion, but we're still going to leave them in, even though we think it's pointless and you shouldn't judge the review by the score. But all you had to do was jump in the forums that people just put up, you know, like, you know, Call of Duty 6. You know, Halo 9, Mario 10, yeah. Bayonetta 10. You know, and it was like that was your typical, you know, nothing about what's in the magazine. Here's these set of
just
scores.
These are the
and
scores
it still
that you'll,
drove you'll, so many people. Yeah. So I think it's a good thing, especially the online component part of it, and saying we're going to start, you know, judging this honestly now because it sucks.
Yeah. I mean, an arbitrary figure of 1 to 10 doesn't really cover all of the nuances of gaming. And what is a good game? So
if you reviewed Drive Club, for example, if you reviewed Drive Club honestly when it came out, you would have given it maybe even as low as like a 3 or a 2. It was just broke.
Yeah.
It didn't work. And now, I mean, I'm playing it almost every day. I really enjoy it. Graphically,
but people,
I think it's stunning.
I guess that's the issue, though. People aren't going to go back to a review to read it again. They're going to read it the first time, and that's going to make their choice. I doubt they're going to come back and read the same thing a month down the line
think you're going to get, I mean, what they've said is they're going to have the one-line summaries and a new recommendation system, you know, so it's but you'll basically get a recommended, essential, or avoid, you know, so it's
Yeah, and if lots of people go and do this, then Metacritic cease to exist. And part of what Eurogame was saying was that they think it actually stifles some game development because people are so worried about the average scores they're going to get that they really rather just play it safe. But have said that about a lot of things through gaming, and nothing seems to make people want to not play it safe just because there's so much money at stake.
No, but you're seeing reviews later and later now because you can almost tell something's going to suck. Because what was the big game that Ubisoft did last year? It was a big open world one that you controlled all the electronics and stuff.
Yeah, I know what you mean, the hacking one.
Yeah,
and I mean, you bought it.
Yeah, but that was talked about for so long. Yeah, but that was talked about for, and everybody talked about how it was downgraded graphics and there was a whole lot of risk about it, and there was all the reviews were embargoed until release day, and you knew straight away, right, there's issues with that game.
Yeah,
because if it was a good game, they would have handed it, and they kept on saying it was because it's online. Away.
Right, that's the end of the news.
Sorry, that was a bit ranty.
Yeah, that's fine. We're allowed to rant. Part of the job description, isn't it? I haven't got a pick. Have you got a pick?
No.
Ha. if you want to find, that's the end of the podcast. And so if you want to find out more about us, what we talk about, what we do, digitaloutbox.com is our website, and you can talk to us if you'd like to. Email info@digitaloutbox.com, and we're also on Twitter, digitaloutbox. Like our Facebook page as well. We've got a Facebook page, right? So go like it.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. I am on Twitter as CheesyUK. Believe it or not, even though I haven't actually tweeted anything for so long. But I also write a blog, academyracer.co.uk, which is where I put all my racing stuff. So if you're interested in what I get up to racing on track, then you can go there. What about you, Ian?
I have high expectations that in this season's racing, I want to see a lap time tweeted for every completed lap that you do. My blog is iand.net, and I'm on Twitter as Sweeper.
How can I do that? Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Cheerio. You want me to give you an answer about how you can do that?
Go on then, how can
I? You're a developer! Figure it out, man.
Very poor one.
No, but surely you can just script that live timings page. Surely you can just script that live timings page so that it sees your number, and when that appears, it just tweets out.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's...
What are you? Are you 77 or something? 73? 78?
77. Wash your mouth out.
What's your number?
78.
Oh, I was one out. Jesus Christ.
big difference. That's Alan Pegram.
It's like I've stepped into Toy Town again or something. Yeah. So you're 78. That can't be the year you were born.
Yeah.
No, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Definitely.
So surely you could see a 78 appear with a lap time and it would just post up.
I don't know. It's all Java widgets, aren't they? So I don't know.
Oh.
Sounds too difficult to me.
I don't know. Don't know.
Answers on a postcard.
Exactly. If you are a developer.